we will be looking into the issue
concerning the farm workers on the different farms in South Africa. And therefore we regard this meeting as extremely important on the way towards addressing challenges and problems encountered by our farm workers. Farm workers who are so important in contributing towards the welfare of agriculture, food security. We regard them as extremely important, as well as the farmers who are very much important for agriculture and food production. And therefore you came once more to brief this committee. We will be listening with greatest attention to hear what are your discoveries since our last meeting up to date, and to look the way forward, how do we move into these issues in the future, because they are important to be prioritized in our agenda. I will give you the opportunity to introduce your team. Let me also welcome the interested parties, stakeholders who are here this morning, who are also taking this matter as important. And that's why we never envisaged to have the size of a meeting, but it indicates what interest is there, that there should be solutions so that everybody in South Africa should be treated equally, as humane as possible. We will not waste any time. Let me allow the leader of the Human Rights Commission to introduce yourself so that we know with whom are we interacting this morning.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning to the Honourable Members of Parliament. First of all, we'd really like to thank you for extending once again an invitation to the Human Rights Commission to come and brief you further on these issues. I need to extend the apologies of our Chairperson, Jody Collison. He would have wanted to have been here today, and unfortunately he had prior arrangements which he could not change, but he is certainly with us. He is aware what we will be telling the committee today and has provided input as well. I would like to introduce to you who I have with me today. I'm the head of the parliamentary unit and I have other members of the parliamentary unit with me. On my far right, I have Jeremisha Zahiri. She's a researcher who has joined us recently. And on my far left, I have Ms. Harriet Bruger, who is an intern with our parliamentary unit. Today we are going to be speaking about evictions and the impact of evictions on people and their lives. And we're going to place it within the context of the Bill of Rights. And in order to do that, we thought it would be far more appropriate for us, as part of our presentation, to request farm dwellers who have experienced an eviction to tell us how the eviction has impacted on their lives, in order to make what we are speaking about today a bit more real. With me today, therefore, I have Ms. Sarah Bjorkus, who is from the Rawsonville area. She will be speaking in Afrikaans about her eviction experience. And after that, I have Mr. Michael Morovi, who is from the Pietermaritzburg area. He speaks a number of languages, and there he will be speaking in Khoza to the committee. when Ms. Vierkes has finished speaking, I can ask Mr. Heary to just interpret into English what it is that she has said. And I was hoping that there may be possibly a Khoza speaking member of parliament who could do the interpretation for Mr. Morobe. Unfortunately, the person from our office who would have done the interpretation is on leave this week. I don't know if we would need a volunteer, if that is all right with the chair.
Well, I do not know. Is there any volunteer from the side of the members of parliament? There's a request that somebody will be talking in Khoza. If somebody could just summarize what has been said. Will you do that, Honourable Member Dlani? Honourable Member Dlani will do that. She will then summarize what has been said.
Chair, I'd really like to thank you for accommodating us. Thank you very much. I think then before I will begin with the presentation to this committee, I'm going to ask Mrs. Bierkes just for 2 to 3 minutes, literally, to tell us about her personal experience of having been evicted and how it impacted on her life.
My name is Sarah Bierkes. I am 47 years old. Ek het 5 kinders in die lewe gebring. Van die dag vandag net 2 oor is. Een 30 jaar oud en die een is 11 jaar oud. Ek is ook die oma van 2 kleinkinders. Ek kan nie lees en skryf, maar ek sal probeer. Ek het nooit skool gegaan nie. Ek is 'n plaaswerker van Rossenburg en was daar gebore. My ma was ook 'n plaaswerker op Rossenburg. My oma Groetjie, en so ver terug kan ek onthou was my mense plaaswerkers in Rossenburg. En ek gaan vandag my story vertel. Vanaf 1965 het ek my man Limba op my Riederplaas gewerk. Dis 'n wynplaas en die eienaar van die Merweplaas. In 2002 het hy siek geword. Voet het begin te swem. Ek het gedink dit is TB. Maar in December maand 2000 ek het gedink dis TB. Hy het vir my gesê dit is uit. Op die 10 Januarie 2003 het hy gesterwe. Die dag na hy vir my gesê het, hy het uit, het ek my laat toets. En ek het uitgevind dat ek ook HIV positief was. Ek het later TB gekry en het baie siek geword. Ek was siek om in die wingerd weer te werk, maar ek het die boer gevra net vir 'n klein werk. Hy het my gesê, nee, ek moet maar daar gaan doodgaan. Hy bedoel, binne in die huis. Uiteindelik het die boer 'n hoop op jou gekry om my te laat ek kan. Die magistraat het die bevel toegestaan om my uit te sit. Ek het 2 maande gekry om die huis skoon te maak en net nergens gehad om naartoe te gaan. Toen in maart 2006 toetred ek by die sportjaar op Rotterdam aan die toilette met my kinders. 2 kleinkinders, daar was onder plaatwerkers, wat ander plaatwerkers ook, wat afgesit is van die plate af. Ons het nergens gehad om naartoe te gaan. En onder een van ons was een zwanger vrouw. Sy het toe gekramp, daar binnen die toilet, daar wat ons gewees het, op die dorp. Ek moes toe die baba vang. Ons het maar so aan die lewe geblei, deur koste kry van die artieskantoor en van die welsienkantoor. In November toe gee die munisipaliteit ons uiteindelik vir ons die stembokke. En om in te woon. Sonder vensters, sonder toilets, die hokke is opgesit daar by die begrafplaas en die wielstelsel. Dit beteken daar wat die mense se toilets kom leegmaak. Onze kinders is van die omstandig rede van die reike. En ons kinders allemaal het hulle siek geraak. In 2006 het Women and Farms daar in Rosenville begin werk en ons gehaal en om sterk te word en saam te staan daar. Die tijd is die boere erg kwaad en mishandel ons nog slechter as voorheen. Dit is nie recht dat iemand soos ek wat haar lewe lang gewerk het op een boerse plaas om op te bouw so sou hond in een hok moet woon. Ek is siek en ek leef. Ek gaan een dag dood, maar niemand sal soos dit wil gaan.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to ask Ms. Zahiri just to summarize in English what it is that Ms. Pearson was saying to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Ms. Pearson came to tell this committee today about the impact which evictions have on ordinary farm dwellers. She made a point that the impact of evictions affects their human dignity, as she was treated like nothing more than an animal. Her story began when she told this committee that she's a grandmother, she's a mother, and she's a woman. She feels that she's been living and working on the farm for generations. It's in her blood. Moreover, that on the day when her husband told her that he's HIV, that he's got TB, or she suspected that he has got TB, she found out that he was HIV AIDS positive, and that he transmitted the disease to her. He then eventually died, and upon his death, she then went to test her status. On finding out the status, she found out that she couldn't do hard labor anymore. And as a result of not being able to do hard labor anymore, she informed her employer on the farm where she worked. It is upon this where he said that she can go and die like an animal in her house. It is therein that lies the onslaught of her human dignity, because no person deserves to be treated like an animal when they're an equal citizen in this country. She goes on further to explain the eviction process and how this process was an onslaught on her human dignity as well. She then concludes by saying, I know that I'm going to die, but please let me die with my human dignity intact. Eviction was her human dignity. Thank you.
Thank you. We're now going to hand over to Mr. Morobe, who I pointed out comes from a different area in the Western Cape. He's from the Pietermaritzburg area, and he just wants to say a few words as to how evictions have impacted on his life and the life of his family and his wife and children.
Michael Morobe. Ngisebenza kwiplasi elibizwa iComuna. Sebenze into engenza iminyaka esibhozo kwelo plasi. Le nto yokubamba ixhoso kwelo plasi iqale kulo nyaka uphelileyo. Ngoba bendiyishopskiwe phaa kwela plasi namhlanje ngobosekelo bala mlungu waphana ubona into yokuba mna ngimnto ohlosa abantu umoya omdaka phana. And then wandiritrentsha ngokoko. Sente kuba gqiba ukunditrentsha wandixa into yokuba funeka ndithathe into zam. Yihambe kwela plasi ngoba akasenandawo yamva. So ke zange ndahambe emva kwenyanga ezithile waphinda wandithumelela ilede esuka kumagwetha lakhe exelela into yokuba funeka ndiphinde ndihambe phaa and then zange ndahambe. Ngoku into eyenzekayo umfazi wam nabantwana bam into endayicingayo ibiyintenye yokuba umntana abantwana bam bazawufundayo. Umfazi wam ndizawuhlala athina ngoba into endayiqaphela ndaqaphela into yokuba axhonthe eplasini noba ngowuphi na umntu sonke singabantu sonke sinazo iifilini. So into endifunayo ndifuna into yokuba ugovernment ayazi into yokuba wonke umntu ohlala apha eMzantsi Afrika unefilini. So into yokuba amagulo abe nayo namalungelo okuba axhothe abantu emaplasini ayonto ilungileyo nokuba sibasebenzele ngokuba abazali bethu babasebenzela ngokuthina basiqhotha njengezinja emaplasini abo.
Can just to make sure that everybody switch off the mic and secondly the cell phones because they might be affecting this whole system. Yes. But obviously also the cameras which are put in, I don't know. But let's hope that it will be okay. Cell phones must be off so that we don't get any disturbance. Thank you for the two inputs. Are you taking over?
Chairperson, thank you so much. There is a worker in front of us, in front of this committee. I was thinking that we will be meeting an interpreter of the show to just call him. Thank you, Morobe, Libua. I'm not a super speaking, but with the contents I did here, he's saying that he has been in 8 years in this farm. I didn't hear the name of the farm, unfortunately. He was working there for 8 years, and then he was a shop steward, and then he has been retrenched from this farm, and then this farm boss. He's saying this, somebody told him to go away. He has got no place for himself just because he has been retrenched. And he didn't comply. He was staying there with his family. And then this owner of the farm sent a letter from his lawyer that he must vacate. He has been retrenched, but he resisted. And then he said that he's worried about the wife, the schooling of his children. He's saying that government doesn't do anything about their plight just because these boys are just chasing them out of the work, out of their venue, but the government doesn't do anything about that. It's appealing that the apartheid is still existing, they don't benefit in this government, because when they are evicted, no schooling for kids, as government, we don't do anything. And then he said he's still living in that farm, and then the government, he knows that there are evictions of people like themselves, but we don't do anything. And he highlighted to us that he knows that they are belonging here in this South Africa, and they were thinking that they must be respected their own rights just because there's human rights. And it's saying that these boers are still doing apartheid to them, and there's no, they are firing them like dogs, saying that we must go away, you dog. I'm sure I was trying to summarize.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. If we can proceed, and I think as I proceed today, it's going to become clear to the committee why it was so important that we have these two inputs from Mrs. Beerkus and from Mr. Morobi. It was the 1st of June 2005 that I appeared before this committee and briefed the committee on the final report on the inquiry into human rights violations in farming communities. The committee will remember that this is a very wide-ranging report. It covers issues from economic and social rights to safety and security to issues around land rights and tenancy. And it was a very full briefing, and we looked at a number of issues, amongst other things, the labour conditions on farms, the low wages that are paid to farm workers, the enjoyment or rather the lack thereof of economic and social rights, issues around housing, the lack of access to healthcare, impact of HIV/AIDS, the fact that many farm workers don't have access to sufficient food or clean water, some of the challenges farm workers face in accessing schooling, and the overall impact of living conditions on the ability very often of farm dwellers' children to enjoy a quality education in this country. We also touched on shortly during that briefing, the members will remember, on the extension of Security of Tenure Act, the law which governs and regulates the evictions of farm dwellers in this country. And back then we spoke about how it was a procedural law. It doesn't provide that many substantive rights to farm workers, and also how evictions have a disparate impact, particularly on women, the children, and the elderly. And we did feel at the end of that briefing that there were time constraints and that we needed to come back to the committee, and that is why we really welcome coming back today, and instead of focusing on everything that was contained in that report, just to speak about evictions today, and to really give a human face to it, and to try and ascertain what it is that we have done, and what is it that we still need to do, and what are the challenges. We need to speak about these issues frankly. It isn't about naming names and naming farms, or necessarily even naming areas in this country. It's to realize and understand that there are some evictions which are going on out there, and that we need to have comprehensive plans available and assistance. That is a short summary of what it is that we will speak about. We would like to place, however, evictions within the context of the Constitution. Section 25, subsection 6 of the Constitution states, a person or community whose tenure of land is legally insecure as a result of past racially discriminatory laws or practices is entitled to the extent provided by an Act of Parliament, either to tenure which is legally secure or to comparable redress. It was in terms of this constitutional provision that the Extension of Security of Kenya Act, or many of us refer to it as ESTA, that ESTA was drafted and came into effect on the 28th of November 1997. Many people still refer to this piece of legislation as a new law in this country. I think we need to stop speaking about it as a new law. At the end of this year, the law has been on our statute books for 10 years. And it's perhaps a very apt and opportune time that this committee today is looking at eviction and this piece of legislation that seeks to monitor legislation. And a very apt time for us to be reflecting on what is happening throughout our country in terms of the eviction and the impact that it has on people's human rights. Security of tenure is one of the cornerstones of the right to adequate housing as well. Secure tenure protects people against arbitrary forced eviction, harassment, and other threats. Secure tenure is a key issue for children, women, and the elderly who enjoy the least tenure security. Just to remind members again, briefly, I will highlight a few aspects of the ESTA. The primary purpose of this Act was to protect farm workers from arbitrary and unlawful eviction, and to ensure that those evictions occur in a lawful and constitutional manner. It is largely a procedural piece of legislation. It is highly technical and complicated, and not easy for many people to access and understand. But it sets out the rights and duties of both landowners and farm dwellers. Section 4 of the ESTA makes provision for the granting of subsidies that will provide for security of tenure and rights in land for farm dwellers. I will return to that later. Disputes in terms of the ESTA can be settled either in court, or it can be referred to arbitration and mediation at the request of one of the parties. I will return to this issue later. It is a criminal offence in terms of the ESTA to evict a person other than with an order of a competent court. The penalty is a fine or imprisonment, a maximum of 2 years, or both. Still to this day, we have only heard of a handful of criminal prosecutions that have occurred in terms of the ESTA. And this is an issue which we perhaps need to look at. We need to recall as well that cutting off the water supply to a farm dweller's abode, in terms of the ESTA, in terms of the definition of what is an eviction, that cutting off the water supply is an eviction. And despite this, in preparing for this presentation today, we requested information from our various provincial offices. And up in Limpopo, for example, I was sent 3 examples of how in communities One example I have here is a farm worker who's lived on the farm since 1935. He has 12 children. He's now been told to sell his livestock. The farmer asked him to leave. He refused to leave, and then the water supply was cut off. So we're still seeing that this is being used as a method on some farms of farm owners and land owners trying and attempting to get farm dwellers to leave their farm. Before we look at the impact of evictions, I just want to mention three brief issues, and perhaps as a Human Rights Commission, we're not the best experts on these issues, but we need to look at the issue more holistically, the whole context of agriculture and farming in this country. We can't look at issues in isolation. I think one of the issues we need to look at is the impact of globalization that has had on farming, the impact of farmers having to compete in more competitive markets, of having to find new and different manners in which they farm, grow different crops, swap over and have more mechanization than labor. We can't ignore these realities. We also need to look at the context of the change in labor laws in South Africa, the implementation of the sectoral determination, that was the introduction of the minimum wage in 2003 on farm workers and how that has impacted. And above all, we also need to look at the response from landowners to the ESTA and how the ESTA is, or should we rather say also, is not used in this country. From these issues and the increased regulated society in which landowners are operating, it has been brought to the Commission's attention that there are evictions that are occurring which didn't occur in the past, and it's interpreted by many as a response to the ESTA legislation. To give the committee an example, when a child turns 18 years old on some farm, the landowner will say that the child must now leave the farm, and that child could possibly still be at school or yet to find employment. But it's to minimize the number of people who are living on farm. It was also brought to the Commission's attention, both in the Western Cape and from other areas around the country whom we consulted with for purposes of this presentation, that elderly farm workers, who in terms of the ESTA, they have worked on a farm for 10 years and reach the age of 60. They are entitled, with various conditions set out in the ESTA, to remain and live on that farm and have secure tenure for the rest of their lives. What has been told to us is that in some areas, landowners assist the elderly farm workers to go and apply for their pensions and to get housing in the rural towns and townships, in order to avoid the responsibility of having to provide the home which that farm worker may have lived in. In some instances, particularly with a lot of your provinces up north, many of those farm workers have been on those farms for many years, in fact their entire life, as Mrs. Beatrice was telling us, generations of her family have been farm workers and have lived on the farm. We have also had stories still, and this is documented in our farming inquiry report, of the use of private security companies to come and intimidate and to participate in the eviction of farm workers. So it's amidst these newer forms of eviction that we are seeing, that we still are also receiving reports of forced evictions taking place, evictions taking place in terms of ESTA, or people being nearly pressurized into leaving the farm. Mrs. Bjerkes was sharing for us for example, in preparing to come here today, how in a sense the other farm workers on her farm also turned against her and also started telling her to leave the farm. So these subtle forms of intimidation and discrimination which can occur. Before I turn though to the issue of the impact on rights, I want to share a concern which the Commission has with the committee. And that is to say, very often when we speak about evictions, it's very easy for some to say that we sound alarmist, that evictions are not taking place on this scale, that we are speaking about isolated examples. But are we? Nobody really knows the scale of evictions and displacement or the movement of people out of our rural areas that is taking place in this country. There's an urgent and desperate need for there to be monitoring in this area so that when we speak, we know whether it is just a handful of evictions or whether it's taking place on some grand scale out there. There's been a very interesting piece of research which has come out recently. It came out at the end of December 2005. It was conducted by an NGO organization called Mkuzi that operates in the Limpopo and Mpumalanga area, together with a research organization called the Social Survey. And they tried to establish between 1984 and 1994, how many people have been evicted in South Africa. And if we look at the period 1984 to 1994, their research would demonstrate that there have been in the region of 1,700,000 people evicted from farms in this country. Many of those relocated to other farms and small holdings, so they nearly moved on after being told to leave. Out of that number, though, only 19,300 were evicted by legal means through ESTA, and this would represent 1% of evictions in this country. For purposes for today's presentation, I think we need to rather look at that research and the findings and look at what has been happening since 1994. That is the period which interests us. And out of all the evictions that took place for the 20-year period, it was found that 56% of evictions had taken place since 1994. There may be reasons that we could go into as to why it's slightly more than half for the past 10-year period. But suffice to say, what it demonstrates is that there appears to have been very little change in the number of people who have been evicted in South Africa post-1994. In the presentation and both handouts, I've set out a table where it sets out the number of people who've been evicted for each year since 1994 up until 2004, the research period. What is interesting and what is marked, and I'm sure one could also come up with other reasons as well for why in some years there are such high evictions, but the link that was made in this research was that there were a high number of evictions in 1994. That was the year of our first democratic election. Also, it was the year of the passing of the Restitution of Land Rights Act. Also, if one looks at the figures for 1996 and 1997, those were the years when Parliament passed the Protection of Informal Land Rights Act, the precursor to the Communal Land Rights Act. And in 1997, an extension of security of Kenya Act was passed. But it almost appears that there is a reaction from landowners, from legislation being passed which protects farm dwellers, to the number of evictions that are occurring. The other year the evictions appeared to spike was in 2003, when in March of that year there was the introduction of the minimum wage on farms. Out of interest, a select committee who represent the different provinces around the country, I thought I would just include that Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal seem to be the two provinces where the most evictions are taking place, followed by Eastern Cape, Western Cape, and Limpopo. Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal made up approximately 20% each of the number of total evictions, and the other three provinces I mentioned made up approximately 10% each. So there appears to be a direct correlation between the protection and creation of rights for farm dwellers and the number of evictions that appear to be taking place. And thus the effort by government to protect farm workers has resulted, it would appear from this research, in the negative and unanticipated consequence of increasing farm dwellers' vulnerability. I now want to turn, and this will really go back to what was said by Mrs. Birkus and Mr. Morobe, is to speak about the multifold impact on human rights of eviction. I want to refer, because I think it's particularly apt for today's presentation, to what our Minister of Finance, Trevor Emmanuel, said in his budget speech in Parliament last week. And I'd like to quote, you'll recall his theme was that life ought to have equal worth, and this was a theme which resonated through his entire speech. As he said in the African tradition, mortal kamoto ha'ana bosa'ana. A human being is a human being. There is no lesser human being. And to quote from him thereafter, he said, the idea that human life has equal worth and that this is a core value that unites us invites us to ask whether we have done enough to give practical effect in South Africa today to our shared humanity. Have we acted in a manner that shows that human life has equal worth? Or do we still live in a society where the shadow of history dominates over the opportunities of an open society? This was a powerful message which I think rings out when you place it within the context of what has been said here today by farm dwellers. And we should bear this in mind when we look at the impact on human rights. I'll run through a few of the rights contained in our Constitution. Section 10, everyone has the right to inherent dignity and to have the right of their dignity respected and protected. There is little dignified about an eviction. It is a traumatic event that has a long-term effect on all who are affected. To remove a family from their home is to see them at their most vulnerable, when they are uncertain to where they will go and what security the future holds for them. There is no dignity for the parent having to be forced to leave the home and explain this to their children, or for children to witness their parents being forcefully removed. Section 9, everyone is equal before the law and has the right to equal protection and benefit of the law. The research has indicated that only 1% of evictions that occur in South Africa are in terms of EFTA legislation. Clearly the law that is there to protect farm workers is not benefiting or protecting farm dwellers. Despite unlawful evictions being criminalised, we know of only a handful of these unlawful evictions that have been criminally prosecuted. Section 9 again of our Constitution says no person may unfairly discriminate directly or indirectly against anyone. The manner in which evictions occur and the lack of dignity that people are afforded can only result in the conclusion that the person responsible for the eviction is behaving in a discriminatory manner towards the farm dwellers and are taking advantage of their vulnerability. There are a number of accounts of racial slurs being used during the eviction process, and this points to discrimination on the grounds of race as a contributing factor to evictions taking place. To give a quote from research, Verbal abuse, often of a racial nature, was frequently part of the process of being evicted and sometimes seems to indicate a racial dimension to the farmer's decision to evict. Section 12 of our Constitution, everyone has the right to freedom and security of the person, which includes the right to be free from all forms of violence or other public or private sources. There are still instances of farm dwellers reporting that they have been assaulted by the landowner and that this is the reason that they were forced to leave the land. Be it an assault, be it being pushed around, there are still these stories coming through that this is occurring. Section 25 of our Constitution, no one may be deprived of property. Think about an eviction and how it occurs. Very often in an eviction situation, the farm dwellers do not have access to the necessary transport to move their meager belongings off the farm. These are then either dumped outside the house or on the side of the road. They are either destroyed, damaged, exposed to the elements, or maybe stolen. And these are people who in themselves do not possess that much. In these evictions in which, and those evictions in which force is used, the furniture and the belongings may even be destroyed. Section 26 of our Constitution guarantees the right to adequate housing. It also guarantees the right that no one may be subjected to arbitrary eviction and that no legislation may permit arbitrary eviction. Clearly, a number of these evictions that we are hearing about from around the country are in clear violation of these provisions of the Constitution. Section 27 of our Constitution says everyone has the right to have access to healthcare services and sufficient food and water. A family that is displaced by an eviction needs to find another place to live and means to be able to care for themselves. Many evictees find themselves in particularly difficult situations and dire poverty. Mrs. Bierke shared with us how she was reliant on food parcels, how she at times had no food to give to her children. And it's in particular in the immediate aftermath, those first few days when the family is trying to get their feet back on the ground, that they are so most in need of help. Section 29, and this is one that is of concern to the Commission, everyone has the right to basic education. The Commission has also done a lot of work in this area. It needs to be thought through how an eviction can have an enormous impact on a child's education. The child may need to change school. This can impact on the child's performance at school and enjoyment of an equality education. It may also impact on the parents financially. They may now have to pay in order to transport the child to school. They may be placed in a situation where there's a new school uniform that must be provided for these children. Where do they, when they're already in desperate circumstances, find the money in order to provide for these? And within all of this, we must never forget, and as I've already said and I'll repeat again, it is women, it is children, it is the elderly who are often the ones who are even more affected by the evictions which are taking place. It is often not as easy for women, for example, to find employment. The elderly, many of them are told that they are too old and that they cannot work. And often it is the women and the elderly who are placed in a situation where they can't work. I also just wish to point out very briefly to the Commission that we've also received anecdotal evidence, particularly from our provinces which border on our neighbouring countries, where we have an influx of migrant workers, that very often all these issues that I've spoken about impact in a far more harsh manner, and that there is exploitation which occurs. What I would like to do today, though, in terms of making suggestions to the committee and in terms of taking this forward, is just to look at three areas where the Commission, we feel we need to challenge ourselves, we need to do more, and this refers to all role players, and where we believe that there's also a role for this committee in terms of its oversight role to get more involved and to play a role. The first is the lack of legal services and assistance for farm dwellers to claim and enforce their rights. It would appear that there is still a lack of adequate legal services which are provided by the state. There are very few civil society organizations who have funding to provide assistance to families who are threatened with eviction. And we'd like to point out the Commission, we've had follow-up meetings with the Legal Aid Board, with the Department of Justice. There have been moves. There are more satellite clinics. There are justice centres. There is more being done. But we need to start questioning and interrogating why the research I referred to indicated that two-thirds of families wanted assistance when they were faced with eviction, but that 75% of people faced with eviction did not know where to get assistance. And we need to start interrogating and grappling with these issues. Given the lack of usage of legal services, it cannot be said that we have done enough in order to inform both the role players and to educate farm dwellers about their rights, but more importantly, to educate them about where it is that they can go in order to seek assistance. And this is clearly an area in which more communication needs to be done. In the research, it was indicated that from a sample taken from a court here in the Western Cape, from the Worcester Court, in a sample of 7 cases where eviction orders had been granted, which would mean that they go on automatic review to the Land Claims Court, that in 6 of these cases, that when the order for eviction was granted, the farm worker was not present in court and did not have legal representation. The Rural Legal Trust, a civil society body which has been set up and networked throughout the country to assist farm dwellers, reports that they have never once been approached by the Land Claims Court to provide assistance to farm dwellers who are being faced with eviction and who need legal representation. Ensuring compliance with ESTA and the following of legal processes to evict farm dwellers will not resolve the issues of people being displaced in rural communities. ESTA creates largely procedural rights and very few substantive rights for farm dwellers. Some commentators have also argued that the Land Claims Court has interpreted the legislation in a far less pro-poor manner than what was anticipated. What perhaps also needs to be mentioned here, which is not in the presentation, is that, as I stated earlier, the ESTA provides for mediation and arbitration of these matters. And some role players have reported to us that they find that mediation can work successfully in eviction matters. Yet despite this, the Department of Land Affairs has been working for many years now on providing a mediation service for eviction. Yet it would still appear that this is still not being used. And there are many commentators who would argue for the fact that one should rather be taking the role of using mediation within an eviction context rather than this highly adversarial court procedure which takes place, which breaks down relationships between parties rather than finding a solution together for a mediation which takes place. Another area that the Commission would like to highlight where we feel that more needs to be done is the lack of emergency services and programs for farm dwellers who are evicted. In the research, it was indicated that municipalities appear to provide food parcels to persons who are in need, who have been evicted, and that in rural townships, the councillors' committee, in addition to the food passes, have also assisted in arranging electricity and piped water. But it would appear as if though throughout the country that at a local government level, more needs to be done to ensure that there are emergency plans in place, and that when people are evicted, that there are plans in place that will look after the rights, particularly the rights of children, which are not subject to progressive realization, but the rights of children to have access to food and water, to shelter, to healthcare services, that, and when their parents who are placed in this situation, that they themselves cannot care for their children, that the local municipality steps in, and that there are plans between the various role players in order to ensure that these farm dwellers are looked after. If we do not have to have the situation that Mrs. Birka spoke about, of having to live in a toilet and having to assist another woman in the middle of a winter night give birth to her baby. This should not be happening in this country of ours, and I do not believe that it is what our constitutional drafters aspire to when we drafted our constitution. And we need to look at this within a rights-based context and to really challenge all of ourselves in terms of what it is that we're doing. Finally, we also need to look at the lack of land programs for farm dwellers and the lack of the usage of the Section 4 programs in terms of ESTA. And I think there again we can refer to our President's State of the Nation speech, where he acknowledged that there is a lot more that we need to do in terms of land redistribution. To quote from that speech, he said, "On the other hand, very little progress has been made in terms of land redistribution. We will undertake a careful review of the inhibiting factors so that this program is urgently speeded up." Little and even less has perhaps been done in terms of the mechanisms that are provided for in terms of Section 4 of the ESTA. This research I've been referring to indicated that there have only been 36 projects since 1997 in terms of ESTA, which specifically provide for farm dwellers. I'm sure that the Department of Land Affairs would inform us that many of their other programs also cater for farm dwellers. But it does not appear that it is known how much of our land redistribution programs are benefiting persons who have been threatened or who have been evicted from their land. And this is also backed up by the research which shows us where it is that people have been evicted, where it is that they go. Most of people who are evicted go to formal urban areas, 38%, followed by informal urban areas, 29%. Quite a number, 40% go back to traditional rural areas. Rural townships are 10%, farms 5%, informal rural small holdings and industrial areas 1%. What we need to look at and what some of the research was concerned with as well is the impact of removing people from farms and the social impact that it had on households. It was found, for example, that there was an increase in malnutrition amongst this group who left farms, an inability of households to cover increased costs in terms of education, that 80% of households were dependent on welfare grants, there was a rise in teenage pregnancy, a rise in HIV infection, often that was linked to women engaging in prostitution in order and becoming sex workers in order to provide an income for their houses. There was an increase in alcohol and drug abuse, which often led to an increase of violence in the family taking place and increases in domestic violence. The social impact of removing people from our farm through evictions or through the mere displacement of persons needs to be looked at very carefully, and we need to challenge this within a rights-based context, and we need to seek out manners in which this harmful impact on this, which does not accord to the society which we are trying to create, to determine what it is that we are doing. Finally, to conclude, just to look at what is the way forward for us. What is it that we should be doing together as role players? Firstly, there's an urgent need for more monitoring and research to be done in order for us to establish more accurately the number and the extent of the evictions that is occurring in this country. Government needs to know whether this is a small and minor issue, or whether this is an issue which is affecting a large number. As the research done by Mkhuzi indicates, 1.7 million people, or almost a million people in the last 10 years since the dawn of our democracy. What is the extent of the problem? We need to grapple with this. Only when we know the extent of the problem can we start determining how much attention and how much resources we should be directing in this, towards this area in terms of how we work. More needs to be done about informing farm dwellers of their rights. Every human being is aware that they have worth. Every human being knows that they have rights. And human beings know when their rights are being violated. What we need to start concentrating on more proactively, and it's an issue for the Human Rights Commission to concentrate on as well, is how do we get the message across to farm dwellers in this country as to where it is that they can go when they need assistance? What is it that we can do so that in years to come, we still do not have 75% of farm dwellers in this country telling us they do not know where to go for assistance when they need assistance in their hour of need? We need to do more interaction with the Legal Aid Board. We need to follow up with the Department of Land Affairs and find out what is happening in terms of alternative dispute resolution mechanisms. We need to follow up more with the Department of Land Affairs, in line with what the President was saying in his State of the Nation address. If we're going to accelerate land redistribution in this country, how will it benefit farm dwellers? How will it impact on the lives of those farm dwellers who are being subjected to eviction in this country? We need a concerted, holistic approach. This is not an issue where we can merely just interact with the Department of Land Affairs. It spans many departments. It spans many spheres of government, down to your local government, your municipality, up to your Department of Land Affairs, your Department of Social Development, housing, education. Everyone is involved here. There's a multifold impact that evictions have on human rights. And it should be the Department of Land Affairs who has the responsibility for implementing the ESTA legislation that starts taking more initiatives and having a catalytic effect in ensuring that all the other departments come on board and view this as an important issue in the lives of people. And I think finally today, we'd like to say that the Commission has really welcomed this opportunity coming here today, speaking to this committee, engaging with this committee, and we are confident that this committee is aware of the very important role that it can play in terms of the oversight function of Parliament, and that the committee, together with the Human Rights Commission, together with the other role players, together with government departments, we can all work together to make a difference and to contribute to making a difference in the daily lived lives of the reality that people face in this country, and that we can have an impact, and that for so many people still in this country, it is unfortunate that what we aspire to in our constitution, that there shall be equality, that people shall live their lives with dignity, that so many of the rights, economic and social rights, are yet to become true realities in their lives, and that we still have so much more that it is that we need to do together in order to ensure that what it is that we aspire for, what is entrenched in our constitution, becomes a reality for all of us in this country, and that every life in this country does have equal worth. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Judy. It is indeed a thought-provoking briefing coming to the Select Committee. 12 years down the line in a democratic society, things are still skewed, people are still living in the past. It's totally inhuman, really, to hear how farm dwellers have been evicted, not having a home of their own, not knowing what to eat the evening or the following day. It's shocking. It's a challenge, in fact, to all South Africans who know what humanity entails. Definitely you do unto others as you should love them to do unto you. We cannot feel well about the state of affairs. You know where we think we are advancing in democratizing this country. But there are some people who are still oppressed, who are still marginalized and pushed to the periphery, not having their own, whereas the laws of this country secure everybody that everybody has got a right for existence. We must thank the Human Rights Commission for this kind of a research. Because if it is not done and placed to the surface, some people may suffer not unnoticed. As you rightfully say, there are so many farm dwellers who are looking for help, but they do not know where to go to access help. It shouldn't be the case, indeed. That implies that we have to look into our different structures so that we cannot leave this unnoticed. Without much ado, let me open to the select committees to further interrogate the subject so that we look how do we move forward and hear the cry and the voices of the lonely who do not know where to go to. I see the hand of Honorable Mzizi, Honorable Van Rooyen, Honorable Honorable Dow, Honorable Judith Yolani, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I really welcome the input of the human rights about the farm dwellers. Chairperson, no person can understand the status of the farm workers if you were not subjected to that. Most of us probably, we grew up in the townships, we grew up in the homelands that were in the place of Amakhosi. Chairperson, because of the time, I will be very brief. The problem starts when a person approaches a farmer. There's no written contract. A person approaches a farmer, you'll have to use an appropriate word in English. When he comes to the farmer, he says, "Bas exu black." That's where they start. And the bas starts saying, what can you do? I can plow. What can you do? I can do this. I can... All these things that the contract not written down. The status of that person becomes a property. He or she becomes the property of that farm, which you can do anything whenever you wish. Chairperson, it is a very treacherous and very sad story to hear of the two people who presented the matter here. The lady spoke of the Eastern Cape. In the message that the Minister of Agriculture and Land Affairs, which she gave to the farmers, she made those utterances that there should be no eviction from that time and up to the new year. Most of the union, they were actually angry and vocal. And in my own interpretation, they were saying that what she said, it was a far-fetched story. She must have sucked it from her thumb. When we visited to the, in our oversight visit in the Eastern Cape in PE, I was approached by one of the people there who said to his father, who was born in 1929, lived in a certain farm in the Eastern Cape. And that farm was sold, to cut the story short, was sold to somebody else. That person said to this old man, "Fine, everybody who is on the farm here will live here. There's no problem." Within a year, that old man with his beast, because if I talk of cattle, I might be talking of something big. He was told that you're no longer needed. He was set out. He did not go. Apparently, this man approached the court and got the eviction order. As I speak now, this person lives in the bush with his cattle. I did actually, because of the matter, had related to the minister's statement during the, on the 9th of February, during the State of the Nation. I approached the minister. "You spoke this thing and the union attacked you and you'll be seeing the union. I've got a fresh story that I can present to you. A person who had been evicted." Indeed so, these people, most of them are illiterate. They don't know how to approach who. Even the very legal aid, they don't even know who are these people. Someone will be served on them, they don't know what to do, just throw it away. And the people that know them will go to court and apply for eviction. Unopposed. And therefore, that eviction stands and that person will be kicked out. I think that's where we need to start. These people must know that framework. If I'm being evicted, what are my rights? At the moment, you are doing a fine job. I can conclude by saying that the life of a farmer the life of a farm worker lies in the hands of a farmer. Let's cite the case. In Limpopo, a farmer stood up there in his veranda, looks down the field, he saw a child moving in the long grass, he mistaken the identity of a human being to a duck. And he just mowed down that duck, only to find that it was a human being. Believe me, when that person appears in court, the court believes the story that he thought that was a dog. Without making sure whether it's a dog, if it's a dog, not to be killed in that manner, then our Lord becomes a mockery. The Select Committee of Safety and Constitutional Rights are following that method. We want to get the record, we want to read it, and see why has the court has actually accepted the decision, let alone the sentence the man got. I think everybody knows that. So I think this is the way where we need to start, that these people, they belong to this country, they vote, they have a right to vote. And I think it is From that score, they should approach the councillors of those regions where they are, so that the council starts giving this thing. If they fail, then they will come to the province or even to us. I think that's where probably a legislation might probably derive from that. Thank you, so that would be my input.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Van Rooy.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, it's heartrending to hear again this morning about farm workers. It's upon us. But I think that the way forward lies with, to a large extent, the Esther Law. This law needs to be overhauled. Farmers have found ways and means around this law. And they abandon, they just evict people. And as you so rightly say, there needs to be emergency numbers, numbers that you can scarf off when you're in trouble. And we need to have dedicated courts, because the courts in the country would also be biased towards the farmer. We need to have dedicated courts to look at these evictions. So we need emergency numbers all over the show. We need dedicated courts. We need money to push into this thing, because it's now reached a kind of proportion. Here in Cape Town, in Constantia, they do it a little bit more sophisticated. They come with a scheme whereby they will build houses for the farm worker, and they will put up a trust, which they own. And the farm worker, no sooner into this scheme, 6 months down the line, and he cannot afford to pay the bond that's on this house that the farm worker, so-called, had given him. Yet they've been there more than 10 years. So the Esther Law is not working at the moment. But from government side, that law needs to be overhauled. That's my input, sir. Thank you.
Let me recognize the Chief Whip of the Council of Churches, Honourable Member Vivi Benfour. You're welcome. Thank you for coming. Honourable Dalo.
Thank you very much. I didn't know that the Honourable Benfour is the Chief Whip of the Council of Churches. But I thought this of the Council of Provinces.
Chairperson, you must understand that our chairperson is a reverend.
No, member. So maybe the SACC also has chief whips there. No, Chair, thank you very much. That was on a lighter note. Of course, one must recognize and share the experiences of Ansara and Debokhara. On the same school, Samanjana, also Samanjana. And therefore, the dissolve on the plug on Shekhar Tamak, so the committee that Yuri Khutasawa will serve for us. The Senate Ganga, but was that a Leicester for the sake of the Leicester? Maar as dinge wat regtig krap aan ons in die eerste plek as mense, because die situasies wat ons in onself in kry is nie 'n tipe situasie wat hierdie government sal like om te sê die situation moet so wees. So therefore the group aan ons om te sê dat is 'n plig for the government of each to do. Of course, the eight dachans is done in the Esther field. The first men, of course, who are interested of Shekhar Tamak, that they undermine each and everything that government wants to do for our people, and in particular, workers and the poor, and the vulnerable, and those who may not find themselves in situations, so Ansara has said it, that historically, Ariel Helen Lear is in the plaza. and the fact that Ansara was also made exposed now, the EDPA education system, the layer of the scrape and the years. So that of course is by our fear of the nature of course. And I think it is important that we must just make that point in the light of all the problems. I think what the commission is saying to us is that there is a problem. And if there is a problem, there is a need for intervention. And how we intervene, of course, we need to take note of the suggestions as provided by the commission. My major worry is the extent to which the commission reports on the anti-poor approach of the Lentils Court. In that, the extent to which they handle cases, the extent to which they approach cases, the extent to which they present their judgments, or even not necessarily the Lentils Court, but if you look at the orders that have been given by courts generally, and they are also anti-poor, they are anti the workers. They seem not to adhere or at least to respond to in the best interest of our people. I mean, if it is clear that you cannot give a judgment in the absence of the other party, and as a judge, you don't even have an interest to find out as to whether if the party was informed, if the party had the means to come, if the party is sick or whatsoever, but you still go on or proceed to give a judgment against the absent party. That in itself calls to question. And I'm very happy that the Honorable Mzizi was able to pick up on that issue, that the Select Committee on Constitutional and the development is beginning to look at some of these and making an assessment of these things. Chair, like I said, that it clearly shows that a lot has been done, it needs to be done. The area that I couldn't, because I wanted to make a comment in relation to a recent study that comes from a book that has been released that seeks also to make an assessment of the land and agrarian transformation program in the country, how it impacts on farm workers in particular. And in that book, you then find a comparative analysis of what is happening in other developing countries, developed countries, and what we are doing in South Africa. And a very important analysis, therefore, is made in the book that seeks to say the kind of programs that a highly capitalist country, very shrewd country in terms of its economic system with regard to capitalism, America, has got better systems in terms of assisting farm workers to exit out of this lowest paid, lowest degrading, or the most degrading, uneducated work, and so forth and so forth. So it makes that analysis and compare with South Africa, where you find that in South Africa, of course, a lot of positive things have been put in place, policies, legislation, and so forth. But the impact of this legislation and policies on the ordinary people such as Ansara and Lebogang does not come out as intended. So that's one area that I couldn't pick up from the commission. Maybe if the commission can assist on that regard. Because like the Honorable Mzizi said, the minister is on record, of course misunderstood and deliberately misinterpreted, to say that not all farmers are bad farmers. not all of them. There are good examples. There are those that are really making an effort to ensure that our policies impact positively on the most vulnerable or those who are exposed to the extremes of the conditions of living. Now, what I would have loved to hear from the Commission is the picture that has been presented, it's of the negative. What positives are there? Are there positive experiences? And if there are those positive experiences, what are these positive experiences? So that as a committee also, based on the recommendations that she has outlined under the way forward, we are then better informed on how then we approach this whole thing. I think that will assist one in further engaging on the subject matter. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This was an information session briefing of the experiences on the ground of the Human Rights Commission, which we really appreciate. But it says much has to be done. I do not know whether you have some comments after what has been commented by members.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just make one or two brief comments. Just for the record, the research I was referring to was conducted by the organization called Mkuzi and Social Survey. It wasn't research which the Human Rights Commission did. But it is possibly the largest study that has been done in a number of years in trying to ascertain the number of evictions, and it was for that purpose that we used that document and to share some of the research findings. Just to go to the last comment that was made about saying how in today's presentation we have dwelled on the negative. Yes. Evictions are a very negative event, a very traumatic event, and we were asked to do the briefing on eviction. That is not to say that, as it was put, there are good farmers out there as well. Certainly there are, because it's certainly not every farm on which these evictions are occurring. It is some farms. But the issue is how many farms at this stage, except for the Mkuzi research, there is within government no accurate monitoring so that we can truly say how many evictions are occurring. And therefore we land up rather in this contestation almost between landowners on the one hand and government on the other hand, saying there are lots of evictions occurring, there's only a handful of evictions occurring. There are good farmers, there are bad farmers. I think in order to take this matter forward, we have to start moving out of that realm and out of that dynamic and say, how do we work together as a nation to resolve this? Instead of constantly, in a way, almost fighting about what are the stats, how many evictions are in fact occurring, we need to settle that debate. We need to say, though, also from a human rights perspective, one illegal eviction is one illegal eviction too much. The impact on one family is too much. And we know that that evictions are occurring, that they are occurring around this country. They do also appear from monitoring to be certain hotspots. There are definitely areas where there are more evictions occurring than others. And we need to identify where those areas are so we can put our resources into those areas. So we need to try and get out of this good farmer, bad farmer debate, and we need to become have a lot more sort of facts and figures before us when we speak about these issues so that we can engage with all the role players. I think what has been highlighted from the comments which were passed is that there is a problem concerning evictions in the country. something needs to be done, that there is a need for more monitoring and also understanding about the impact of eviction. Clearly, ESTA is just not being used as we had anticipated and expected. Clearly, ESTA is not working. Clearly, many landowners are finding ways around ESTA. Changing ESTA, though, may not necessarily bring about all the changes that we want. When we think about an eviction, we can think about it in terms of it can sometimes be a very messy divorce. It's about people. People who've lived together on the same land for a number of years. The relationship has broken down and now they are parting ways. And that is why we need to think about it more holistically and why we need to bring in a broader range of role players and why the Commission was also arguing strongly for us to really investigate methods of alternative dispute resolution where you can bring in the other role players as well. And just to report, the Commission has interacted with some of the farmers' unions, and we are currently engaging with farmers' unions around the country on a number of matters. And in many of these matters, we are making headway. We did make a decision, though, today that we would not refer to specific cases that are ongoing and that we are dealing with. But there are relationships with many of the farmers' unions, and they're ongoing around the country. That have been taking place, particularly in recent weeks. So those relationships between the Commission and the landowners and their representatives, it does exist, it does there, and we are engaging with them very actively on many of these issues as well. I think that what is also demonstrated to us with, in terms of ESTA not working is that in a sense, human rights leads us down the path of becoming a highly regulated society where we follow procedures. And ESTA has become a procedural piece of legislation to regulate how a person gets evicted. And in that, we lose the humanity of what is actually happening. That this is actually a person, this is a family, this is children, this is a woman who is being evicted and what the reality is. And I think that is really what, as the Commission, we were seeking to achieve here today, was just to bring that human face to evictions as to what it is that is occurring and to point out that it is still an issue, it is one which we still need to address. And we can't just deal with it in terms of laws and regulations and policies, but we need to really engage 12, 13 years into our democracy as to how these regulations, laws and policies are working and are they being effective and do we possibly even need to change any of them. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Another one from the audience.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson,
Come in, I will remember.
Yeah, can I maybe just ask this two questions? As you're doing your research throughout the country, have you maybe identified what spots, maybe provinces where evictions are most? And maybe also just to check on the human rights capacity of dealing with the whole country. Obviously, we understand that it is extremely important that everybody should be engaged with this issue, which is highly inhuman indeed, something that could not be tolerated. And it is unfortunate that it's happening in our country. And that's why I just wanted to know whether is the Human Rights Commission covering all the provinces, or how are you operating, as you rightfully said, that you're dealing with the whole country, and you are indeed doing a very superb work. You're keeping people thinking that there are people who are suffering somewhere unnoticed, and you're showing them. Oh, Honourable Member Ventura.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. I heard the Honourable Member Tao saying maybe if it's possible, here and now get recommendations which could then be tabled to the committee. But if it's not possible, it can still be submitted later on. So that as the committee prioritizes some of these matters, it can then take on board the recommendations, which are not only coming to the committee through the presentations which have been made today. Because I think the audience which is here should also be made aware, one, that as Parliament we have put in terms of our rules and procedures, allowance of people who make written submissions, which are also taken on board and be referred to those appropriate parliamentary committees to deal with. Secondly, there are other matters which we pick up as we do our work with our glorious program of taking Parliament to the people who have been in various areas to visit them and so on. Part of the issues we come across those of evictions. Some are not necessarily of eviction. You get even the basic living conditions in the farm itself and so on, because it does not say if a person has not been evicted, that person is living a heavenly, heavenly kind of a condition in those farms. Of course, we cannot deny that there are other excellent successful stories which were caught in certain farms and so on. I must say upfront, Chairperson, I don't share the sense that we need only to concentrate on the negatives and so on. Because also by picking up those good stories where there are farmers who have got human solidarity with their farm workers, you can use those examples in order to preach the gospel to those who are still having those inhuman way of dealing with the other farmers and so on. So that you don't leave a situation of saying, But what I want to say is that, Chairperson, this is a very serious matter which the country will have to deal with, and in a very kind of a coordinated way. Because one would like to say we need to have a joint effort of dealing with this. We exist as National Parliament, we have got 9 provincial legislatures, who also have got provincial legislative committees who deal with issues around land and agriculture, who can directly link up with your regional land commission issues and so on, where some of these land issues are dealt with. You speak about how many 284 municipalities which are at the coal face of some of these issues. It will then need for the committee to have a way of how we ensure, in terms of our constitution of cooperative governance, how do we enjoin all these other spheres so that we have a collective effort of fighting it, not only from one side, because I will pitch your committee, when are you going to round up all the farms which have got problems in the country? But we will then need a kind of a joint, well-coordinated effort which can assist your committee together with your other members, Chairperson, to say, as you were saying, if we write letters to municipalities, could you identify farms within a municipality where there are these hotspots in terms of evictions and so on? If you put a certain time frame, it can give you an indication after 2 months where should your committee concentrate together with the other authorities which are supposed to be dealing with this issue and so on. So my view was that, Chairperson, let's allow that process to take place so that as you receive and consolidate the inputs, you can then say, this is the program the committee must take in order to deal with these matters as we take them forward. Of course, we will agree in most farms the situation after 1994 has changed for the worse. In other farms, it has changed for the better. I'm not here to say I can give you a scientific proof to say where are we as we stand now. But as we move forward, we are in a position because the country is becoming more open, it's becoming more transparent. Some of the issues which were hidden before, you are in a position now to say they can come out to the open. But it does not say that I can understand if, you know, I've been through situations where you get families during rainy seasons who sometimes, you know, tents along the roads and so on and the like. You have been to situations, Chairperson, where you go to a farm clinic, the nurse will tell you, I treat not less than 25 cases of farm workers whose farmers or bosses have let dog onto them and so on. You have those situations. So it needs us to be pragmatic and at times we have to control ourselves not to be that much emotional, but be objective as we deal with some of these issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Dow.
Thanks, Chair. I think generally the Chief Whip has really put the issue into context in relation to not necessarily playing one against the other, but emphasizing the point that it is important that as a country, we need to learn from some experiences. It is important that we learn from those experiences. Secondly, is the whole notion of because that's what I couldn't pick up as an issue that comes for purposes of a way forward. The commission identified serious economic reasons, if not ideological global issues, the way they outplay themselves, leading up to the evictions. But you seem not to be saying how then do we respond to that, or what are the possible issues that can be put in place as systems to empower these farm workers. Lastly, Chair, without repeating what the Chief Whip has raised, relates to the capacity and mobilization of civil society to really respond to some of these issues, over and above what government then does, taking the experience of Lebogang as an issue. He was dismissed as a result of being a shop steward on the farm and leading up to his point of eviction. So how then do we ensure that the civil society then plays that strategic and critical role to augment or to then partner with government to ensure that whatever programs that are being put in place respond to some of the issues that you raised in terms of support, in terms of awareness, raising consciousness, general mobilization of our people to avoid a situation where if a person is faced with challenges, the first thing that person sees is my Messiah. This farmer is my Messiah. What are the systems that we are proposing or have been put in place that need an injection to raise the level of farm workers or dwellers' consciousness to begin to see themselves as these South African citizens over and above them as subjects, as objects, as commodities, as others have been literally reduced to in some of these farms. I think it would be important as well that we pick up on some of these things and engage society in general. Thanks.
Maybe also just one question also. You made mention of 19,300 evicted by legal means. Do you maybe have some other figures of those who have been evicted through non-legal means. And if we say evicted by legal means, how? What do we mean by legal means? What are your findings as a law firm when you look at these issues that were, the eviction were through legal means? What is your research saying? Are our courts really doing what they're supposed to be doing? Because there are problems around there. You find there are eviction letters issued to farm dwellers. But when you investigate, you realize those were not legal eviction letters from a magistrate or so. But it's to impress them that a legal cause has been embarked on, whereas it's not legal. You know, these are problems I sometimes encounter in my area when we look at this document to realize they are not legal. And these are the problems we sometimes encounter.
Just a quick follow-up, Chair, before you respond. Here is this thing, thanks that you raised this illegal eviction. On page 4 of your presentation, under the research by Nkuzi and what again? Yeah, social service. Evictions between 1984 and 1994. I don't know if I'm reading it correct. You say legally evicted by means of a court order. Under which legislation was that? Just the purpose of clarity. That is the last. Do you see where I'm pointing at? Because I was a bit confused as to whether, but Esther came only in 1996-97, but already before 1994. We had legally evicted people by means of court orders. Under what legislation was then those evictions placed? Thanks.
Okay, I can come in. Just to clarify that last one, that's clearly a typing error that has slipped into our document. That should be 1984 to 2004. But I can double check that with the research, and if the typing error is different from that, I'll come back to the committee. I must apologize for that, and thank you for pointing it out. I think, again, just to start with the last question from the chair on legal evictions. The legal evictions we're referring to there are the ones which are done in terms of the ESTA. But I think it links back to a concern which our chairperson, Jodie Collison, has as well, and which we discussed in preparing for this briefing today. And that is the difference between legal processes and social justice, and recognizing and respecting and upholding the dignity of people. Because our constitution has said that Parliament must draft a legislation to regulate eviction. Parliament has done that. We've complied with the constitution. We've now got a highly regulated system that is procedural in manner, and therefore the procedure can be followed. But does that procedure fit the social reality in which it operates? And from a social justice perspective, is there justice for all? Because in a sense, people are receiving their eviction orders, as was demonstrated from the sample from the Worcester Court. People are not even coming to the court when the eviction order is being granted. So does the legislation fit with the social reality in which that legislation works? And should we be interrogating that and seeing what it is that we should be doing? So that point you raised is a very apt one, because it can be said that these procedures are being followed, but what is the impact and what are the unintended consequences of those procedures being unfollowed? Also, just in terms of, Chair, you asked about hotspots. Certainly, and once again, we must point out that there is a lack of monitoring. So the evidence the Commission receives is often very anecdotal. And if the committee would like, we can put this anecdotal information together and send it to the committee. But it has to be realized that it's anecdotal. There is no monitoring mechanism. And when you rely on anecdotal evidence, one may be missing out, but there are only the spots which are brought to the attention of the commission. But there certainly do appear to be some of these, what we call hot spots, which are being brought to the attention of the commission. And if the chair would like, we can certainly send a supplementary document to the committee, if that would assist the committee in what it is that the committee would like to do. I think also just a last comment, the chair was also concerned about the ability of the commission and the capacity of the commission. You know, the commission doesn't have endless capacity, but nor do we ever like to rely on that and state that as a reason for why it is that we do not do work. But I think we also do need to be realistic. For example, I was having discussions with colleagues yesterday about the Limpopo province in Nelspruit, where there's been engagements recently around farm issues. And there, the feeling of our Nelspruit office is that they're managing to service and find out what is happening in the areas closer to Nelspruit. But they are aware, and they're very aware, that they are not getting to the far outlying areas, and that is a very large province. Our Northern Cape office as well, we know that province has got a very small population, yet as the Human Rights Commission we have one office based in Upington with a legal officer, an education officer, provincial manager and three interns. That is the staff complement, and they have to travel vast different distances in that office. So yes, I think the commission as well, we currently also engaging with ourselves and we're challenging ourselves, and I think through the Chapter 9 review process which is going on currently in Parliament under the auspices of Keda Asma's committee, there's this whole challenging process going on internally as well as we ask ourselves, how can we become more effective, how can we become more known, how is it that we can reach out to more people and have greater coverage and greater scope in terms of telling people about their rights. So yes, we do as a commission as well recognize that we have got limitations in terms of capacity and that we have to keep on working out how we can work in more creative manners and how we can reach more people and inform them about their rights and also inform them about where they can go when they feel that their rights are being violated.
Thank you very much. I think in terms of time, we have to call it a day. But then, unless there's something one of the members would love to raise, I will be leading towards closing this session. But closing this session, you want to come in? Okay.
Chairperson, I think when the human rights goes back, you probably helping us. We should not only look at the evictions of people from farmers. There is other aspects that is also coming up very strong to dehumanize the people. Let me say, in the case of Sarah, her husband is very deprived in that farm. And when probably she passed away, she would like to go and be put next to her husband. Even if she can die on that farm, some of the farmers say, that person is not buried on my farm. That's finished and done. I think if that also could be taken up so that we know exactly. And the last one, I think that does not challenge the eviction order. The civil matter is a civil matter across the line. Where we start with summonses, which most of our people ignore the summonses. And when the court has given a conviction and also has given an order, then people want to rise up when they see the order. We must teach our people,
Any document that comes from the government, don't ignore it. Go and find out what is happening. Thank you.
But Chair, the research by Nkuzi and what was surveyed indicates that most of the farm dwellers are illiterate and do not have access to information and do not know how to access this information. The point would be whether if they will be able to understand in the first place if this is a court order or a summons. So maybe we need to revert back to the issue that seeks to say we need to look at how then do we assist the Human Rights Commission to improve on its capacity to increase its capacity to reach out more to our people than to really leave it at a point that says it's the responsibility of our people also to respond to the court orders and so forth. We need to be sensitive to the area that there are also challenges that most of the farm workers are faced with, and one of them, which is central, is the question of illiteracy. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Maybe it will also be important if we could have the data of the human rights with your officers throughout the country so that we could inform our members that they know where your offices are, so that we interact with you from time to time, not only during times like this when we call you, but that this engagement will be an ongoing engagement. Because we also have offices throughout the country. We have our constituency offices, so that our constituency offices could be popularized in their respective areas, so that farm workers could know where to go when they have problems. It is very much unfortunate if somebody encounters a problem and does not know where to go. And whereas maybe the office is just next door,
that office might be unknown. That's something we have to work on, so that this problem cannot be left unnoticed. On the other side, we must also engage with the farmers. You know, as constituency
offices in my area, we sometimes organize meetings with farmers and organize meetings with farm workers to caution them, to make them aware of their rights and to alert them to know where our offices are. Because otherwise our people will suffer, not knowing where to go to. And therefore, if we could have your data of your offices throughout the country, we could try, you know, to address this issue and to talk to most of the MPs, because it's a real problem for all of us, that how do we really, you know, take on board the suffering matters of our people while we are in a democratic order. We want to thank you very much for your research, your ongoing research, and your commitment as a firm and taking at heart the plight of the farm workers. For me, it is much more challenging. Maybe it's because my parents were farm workers, and I was a farm worker as well. But if that is the case, it means much has to be done. It's a challenge to every South African. Sometimes we take things for granted. You see people dumped along the road, just drive passing as if things are normal. It implies that everybody has to take this matter very seriously. It's like when we talk in terms of crime in this country. How do we face crime? How do we do it? Is it a matter of police only? It is not. It's a matter of every citizen of this country. And together, when we link up, we will be able to address that problem. And that's why I'm saying the issue of the farm bureaus as well. Together we can do something. I think you have raised this matter and this committee has taken it up. We will look into it and see how do we go forward with it. But we'll remain in touch with you. Maybe in the future we should have public hearings where we go out and address the issues where farm workers are present, where we should address the issues also where farmers are being invited, and so that we engage and try to change the mindset of those who still live in the past, whereas South Africa belongs to all who live in it. That understanding should be the imperative to everybody. And by doing that, we'll be normalizing things instead of creating enmity. Let me thank everybody. Thank the members who engaged the subject. Thank the Human Rights Commission. We wish you all of the best and well. Pursue the matter. It's of greatest importance. And let's also thank were they the talk of Lebogang and who Sarah Beakers. Thank you for coming also to give you your side of the story. And we thank all the stakeholders.